And the Rugby League Week player poll has come out, boys. I want to focus on a couple of things with you. First up, should the NRL ditch the bunker? They get 100 players to come on and make the decisions on this. 53% said no. They like the bunker. 47% said yes. So pretty split.
We'll have to go to the bunker on that.
Well, they get a breather, don't they? When their bunker are looking at something for 3 minutes, it gives the players a rest. They probably love it.
I suppose so. But you've been very adamant, Matty, that you think the bunker should go. Just literally toss it away.
I don't think we'd miss it. And at the very least, I think that we should revert to a player's challenge, captain's challenge, of which we don't go to the bunker unless they call for it.
I think that's where we're heading, Matty. I think, we were speaking earlier about watching a game yesterday from 1991. It was obviously a game I was playing in, but the purity of it, the confidence that the referee had in talking to the players didn't back chat once to the referee. The referee had total command.
MG, I'd be in favour. I would actually be in favour of turning the referee's mics down as well. I don't need to hear him say surrender. And I think it would lend itself to a far better relationship between referee and player for him to come out and say, MG, come out here for a second.
Mate, you're a bit
of a mug. Let me have a talk to you. If you keep having a go at this bloke, you know, he's going to put one back on your chin.
Eddie Ward said that.
Eddie Ward was the referee.
He said, mate, what are you doing? He said, this is a major semi-final. You keep going, this, you're going to be off the field. And I listened to him.
See, that's the way that they used to talk
Billy
to the
Harrigan,
players.
Same. Yeah.
And build relationships with players.
Well, if you go to the player poll when it comes to the referees, it's exactly that the players are saying, we don't have that relationship anymore. They're arrogant and they go on. And obviously, over the next few days, we'll go through all the best players in the game and that sort of stuff. You know most of the answers to them. But let's focus on something that really stood out for us, boys, and that's player well-being. Now, the question was this. Do you know any other player or players with depression?
Well,
85% said yes.
That's staggering.
Have you suffered from depression? 22% said yes. Is there enough help available for players struggling? Yes, there is. They believe there is something there, 79%. Does the NRL do enough for players who have fallen on hard times? 33% said no. 66% said yes.
Yeah. Depression, yes. This is what happens, you know. And I've said to people all the time, I've spoken to a lot of people involved with the game, is that we are, and I don't know how we fix it, but it's a byproduct of young people, and you see it. We've had some terrible things happen the last couple of years with the under-20s. Some young under-20 players take their life, and I've been a big advocate. You've just got to find a way to take the pressure off young people and young players, and let them know that, you know, that it's not the be-all and end-all. You know, that's the thing, isn't it? MG, when you're young and you're 18, 19, and you feel a first grade career at your fingertips, you're so desperate. And to think that, you know, you might not achieve that sometimes, the pressure you put on yourself, it's awful.
I would say, at a guess, maybe 10, 15% of current rugby league players have plan B for after football.
Yeah.
They've already locked in and said, okay, this is what I've got my investments happening, I've got my studies happening, but that's way too low. I know myself, when I retired in 2000 at 32, I had no plan B because I wanted to play another year. So I didn't really think about life after footy. And I don't think I had depression. I know I had anxiety.
Yes.
I had anxiety about, okay, I've just gone from $360,000 a year down to $700 a week in the hand with three kids.
Yep.
And I had no job prospects on the horizon.
Yep.
I think it's very important you have mates away from footy. I think it's also very important that you have a contingency plan once you finish playing rugby league, whether it be a lawn mowing business, whether it be buying a shop, whether it be buying a unit. There's always got to be a plan B. You make so much money when you're playing footy in that 10-year period, then it's gone.
You know, and the other thing too, on the subject of young people in the game, young players in the game, is that oftentimes, you know, I can understand when you get to NRL level, you know, and the stakes are high and everything like that, and coaches treat the players a certain way because they are full-time professionals. But I sometimes listen to the at under-20s level, and I just think at under-20s level still, a lot of them are still just their kids, really.
They're babies, mate.
Yeah, they are, mate. Some of your kids are 17 playing there. And what I see is some of the coaches, not all of them, but some of the coaches look to people who they look up to, like Craig Bellamy and that, and say, okay, that's how I become a coach.
Yep.
But it just puts too much pressure on the young players. And as far as retired players concerned, I tell you, the proof's been in the pudding for me in the fact that a few months ago I did a thing on a guy that I went and saw who, you know, treats guys in America as far as their head and stuff are concerned, Adrian at Manly, and he's in the eastern suburbs. And I left a number here at Triple M for people, and Adrian's seen a lot of people, Triple M listeners, who have had things such as car accidents, and he's been a great help to them. But the amount of ex-players that have called me, right, that have called me and just said, Matty, I am struggling. I am on the brink. You wouldn't believe the crazy things I do. You know, and they're absolutely lost. And you can hear the desperation in their voice. And it feels like they're hanging on to life by their fingernails. And they've gone and seen him. And you know, I speak to some of these players quite a bit. But the other thing about it on top of it, they cop it from both ends, because first thing they say to me when they call me is, please don't tell anyone that I've called you.
Yeah.
Please don't mention my name. I'm really embarrassed about
this. That's a stigma.
That's the stigma, and people just talk about it quietly. And that's their right too. And the fact that you're giving them that medical help, that's all you can do.
Yeah, they go and seek the help. And as I said, you know,
are they better because of that?
Yeah, some of the guys are really, really turning the corner. And oftentimes we put those ex-players. What would happen? Another thing that, you know, that was shameful about it is that ex-players who said that they suffered from anxiety and depression, people were like, oh, yeah, you know why? Because they're out of the limelight.
Yeah, toughen up and get a bit of concrete and all that stuff.
Where, mate, it's an awful thing.
We often end this conversation with, you know, the lifeline number and stuff, but which is very important. If you are struggling, call someone. But Men of League are an organisation that have grown and grown and grown in the last decade that wasn't there when we were players, Matty, when we retired from footy, but they're there. They're there if you're an ex-player who's nearing the end of his career and you want just someone to chat to. Mm. Speak to the Men at League.
Yeah. And as I said yesterday, at 9 a.m. at Queenscliff, Shannon Nevin, who's an ex-player, he's doing a thing called the Walk and Talk.
Yep.
Look, there'd probably be a couple of ex-players on that, but even if you're a person out there and you're struggling a little bit and you're after a bit of companionship, they meet at Queenscliff this Sunday at 9 a.m. and they just go a bit of a walk and a bit of a talk and way to unload.
Perfect.
Absolutely.